Blog Talk Radio.
That is my cue. Welcome, everyone. You are listening to This Week in Health Innovation on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I'm Greg Masters, the producer of the show and your host today. This Week in Health Innovation is brought to you by Health Innovation Media, where we monitor the innovation impulse from idea to business model. Today, we continue to focus on innovative companies in the health IT space, sourced from HIMSS 14, in Orlando, Florida last month. Since its launch in 2007, the Venture Plus Forum has become a core part of the overall HIMSS experience, especially for those interested in emerging companies, their enabling technologies, and or business models. Emerging from a pool of 20 talented innovators to earn a best-in-class recognition by a seated panel of seasoned judges is ActualMeds. And today my guest is its CEO and co-founder, Patricia S. Meisner. Pat Meisner brings 25 years of executive operating experience from both early stage and mature companies in the medical device, diagnostics, life sciences companies, including Invitrogen, T-Cell Sciences, and Sigma Aldrich Corporation. She has brought multiple new products to market in the areas of HIV monitoring, cancer diagnostics, pharmaceutical drug discovery. Prior to founding ActualMeds, Patricia founded Redtail Solutions, a software-as-a-service company serving middle-market manufacturers in the global supply chain. While serving as its CEO, she established a new revenue and business model in this segment and built a capital-efficient business that achieved profitability in 2007. ActualMeds provides web-based solutions to facilitate patient data collection and automate coordination of care for medication management in patients with chronic disease such as hypertension, congestive heart failure, and diabetes. The solution is optimized for older adult patients who typically have multiple chronic conditions and the most complex therapeutic regimens. Or as CEO Meisner summarized for the audience benefit, quote, think of us as the Carfax of medication reconciliation. So welcome to This Week in Health Innovation, Pat.
Thank you so much, Greg. It should be very interesting and fun to participate today, and I'm excited about this opportunity. And thanks again. Well,
me too. And so before I ask you about the impulse to build and launch ActualMeds, set the scene here for me a bit with respect to the industry zeitgeist, so to speak. Then let's dive into the genesis and value proposition of the company.
Okay, great. I think one of our observations since starting the company is how much transformation has occurred in the most recent 18 months. And in particular, influenced by two things. Everybody recognizes global payment reform as being one, as we see all the stakeholders in the care continuum beginning to share risk. So that has definitely been one major factor. We see more accountable care types of frameworks forming. And the second is the enabling technology, which has put new emphasis and focus on health IT. The whole concept of interoperability and sharing of data is enabling to these new risk-sharing frameworks. And I think both are needed together to get us to achievement of the triple aim, which is better healthcare in terms of outcomes, better healthcare delivery in how we bring this to patients, and reducing the cost associated with that.
So let's talk about how your looking at the market, your portal of entry, talk a little bit about the genesis and the base that you've built in terms of your product and offering.
Okay. So we actually started looking at our core technology almost 5 years ago, and the genesis of it was a clinical trial, an NIH randomized controlled trial that was conducted in the University of Connecticut School of Nursing, which showed that if you could elicit and understand patient self-medication behavior, especially in older adults, that you could have an impact on their outcomes. And in this particular trial, we showed that by using a structured interview in the hands of a nurse practitioner with older adults who had hypertension and were under the typical standard of care, that using our structured interview and the results where a nurse could in real time counsel these patients as to their medication regimen, we showed that we could get them to their blood pressure target more rapidly with fewer drugs and lower doses than the standard of care. And the interesting finding that came out of it was all of the self-medication that older adults do with NSAIDs, things like ibuprofen and the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, they take them all day long for arthritis and pain, and this, in fact, interferes with a hypertension regimen. And it's surprising how many people don't realize that, least of all the patients. And the very fact that in a teachable moment a nurse could counsel the patient and tell them to take Tylenol instead of ibuprofen, that was a key reason that we could get to that outcome. So that's that technology was brought to my attention, and I thought this is very interesting. We started looking at it, at the technology. Could this be a patient education tool, which it very well can be, and we'll come back to that at some point. But there were not good payment models in the marketplace at that point. So we literally spent the next 12 months or so doing a deep dive to find out who needs and pays for medication management and information and identifying the pain points and the gap in the market. And that has brought us to pretty much where we are today, which is to really supply healthcare teams with the best possible medication information at the right time and at the right place when they can have an impact on outcomes for these more complex patients.
So it has an end-user benefit in terms of the Medicare patient. Who is the customer for the service here?
Well, today it's primarily payers who use and pay for medication management. They are required by Medicare, if you are a Medicare Advantage plan or a Part D prescription drug provider, to offer medication management services to the highest risk cohort of patients. And these are patients who are on 6 or 7 prescriptions, who typically have more than one chronic condition. And the current threshold, have about $3,000 in prescription expenditures per year. In January, Medicare put out a proposal to say that in 2015, they want to widen the net for the definition of those high-risk patients, meaning in particular on the $3,000 spend on prescriptions, because so much of those have been replaced by generics, that's sort of an artifact. So they're reducing that criterion to $600 per annum. So that changes the game pretty dramatically, and now plans will need to focus on literally an order of magnitude more of the Medicare patients who are high risk. So that's existing market for us today. As we, again, look at models of shared risk, as payers begin to recognize that if you put care coordination and complex care models in place, you're going to improve outcomes, medication management and reconciliation is a key underpinning of successful care coordination and transitions of care. So they're doing that. And providers as well on the healthcare system side, they know that medication reconciliation is very important to keeping patients from coming back into the hospital, from being readmitted. And so they also are focused on care management programs. And this is because Medicare is no longer fully reimbursing a readmit that occurs within 30 days of a discharge. So we see payers and providers moving closer together in care management and transition of care programs, and that's the next market space that we will move into.
So is this mostly in the post-acute care milieu?
Yes, definitely. You could think of us as bookends to acute care. A patient goes into the hospital and they're on a particular medication regimen. But once they get into the hospital, they move through any number of transitions. If it's for surgery, then to intensive care, then to a regular floor, each of those represents a transition that the hospital or the acute care setting has to manage. But then the patient goes home, and when you think about it, it's not even just the old, the older adults or frail people, but a few weeks ago, a healthcare executive was telling me about his heart surgery, recent heart surgery, and how, you know, he went into the hospital with the several drugs he was on, but he came home from the hospital with a whole raft of new medications. And it was so confusing to him that he actually had to call his daughter, who is a physician, to come over and help him sort out all the meds. And that's a key patient reconciliation is absolutely needed at discharge from the hospital. So definitely in the acute care setting. Ambulatory setting. Sorry.
Okay, and so this would generally fall under maybe the theme of global payment reform. So your likely customers are going, when you say payers, you're probably talking mostly about, but not exclusively, but mostly about Medicare Advantage programs and who have a population-level focus in terms of membership that they're at risk for. But what about ACOs who also have a threshold at population health? Might they have an interest in this type of service?
Yeah, absolutely. You're exactly right. The Medicare Advantage plans and very specifically managed care organizations. But wherever you see an integration of payer and provider, which is the premise of accountable care frameworks, absolutely. And that's my earlier reference to how we've seen those really start to take root. And they're not necessarily all in the exact same mold, but it's this concept of sharing risk between payers and providers. And definitely that is a very important target for us.
So Medicare Advantage, emerging ACOs, any bundled payment where there's some type of budget-driven accountability for cost and quality would also seem to fit the mold.
Absolutely. Absolutely right.
Great. So let's pivot then to the other piece, the interoperability. Talk about that. What are some of the issues there?
So that, in fact, I think is the crux of the problem today. We all recognize information is still very much siloed between stakeholders in the continuum of care. You have payers who, the managed care organizations who are managing risk, who rely almost entirely on their claims data. And we know claims is a proxy for clinical information, yet it's the best source of structured data out there. And then you have, on the provider side, they're using data that have been entered into their electronic health records, their EMR systems, and interestingly, that is a lot thinner than claims data from what we're seeing. So that is very much a function of how an EHR has been implemented and how users have been trained to use it. So there are a lot of different ways that data go into the EHR, especially around medication. So that is siloed, and doctors are making treatment decisions based on the medication information that's available to them in the EHR. That's often incomplete. It's sometimes not current, but that's what they have. And then until now, no one has really made an attempt to look at the patient as a data channel as well and to capture not only what, but how, when, and why the patient is taking their medications as a and capture that as structured data. So that's what we're doing. We're putting that all together from those three sources. We seamlessly combine that. We aggregate it. We validate it. We scrub it. We distill it and present it in a way that a member of the healthcare team can see the best possible medication record, the most current, the most accurate for that patient, and be able to then take appropriate action or actually guide a more tailored intervention for that patient.
And I don't know if this intersects here, but as I've heard before, you know, the future is here. It's just unevenly distributed. So as we think about this, these dimensions of interoperability and the value prop and the challenge of bridging, I guess, big data as a promise to bridge claims and clinically generated information, as well as now patient-generated stuff. I mean, mashing that all up together seems to be the big challenge here.
It is a huge challenge, and it's a very hard problem that we're solving, but that is one of the core competencies of our company. And believe me, I learned a huge amount from my experience with RedTel in the supply chain space about standards-based interoperability. And I think you have to think of it in layers. Everybody now gets how you can put the plumbing in place, the basic connections, but it's really the data that are flowing through the pipes, and you can liken it to a water filtration process where it's you have to filter it, distill it properly, and display it so that people can use it and make sense of it. And there's still a long way to go in terms of standardization of the data. There are so many different standards out there in terms of even how you identify and describe a medication. So to say nothing of matching it to a patient and matching a patient's claims versus their clinical information and self-reported information. So basic interoperability where we can connect to the various systems, pull in the data, is one level. When you start to think about deep integration, that gets really, really hard. Our goal at this point is to aggregate, validate information, and then serve it up at the right time and place. So, to just make it available to whoever in the care team needs it.
So, big challenge, more than just a plumbing issue. What are some of the consequences of not doing medication reconciliation? Why does it matter to get it right?
Well, at the macro level, this is an often quoted number. The New England Health Institute published a report a few years ago and updates it. Almost $300 billion of our healthcare costs today can be related directly back to problems with medications. And it's called an adherence or a compliance problem, but that's really just the tip of the iceberg. It's not just about getting people to not miss their doses and take more drugs. It's really about optimizing their therapeutic regimen, getting it right in the first, and then achieving compliance with the patient. So that's the magnitude of the problem we're solving. And again, it's getting all of the siloed information together so that you can have the most accurate picture of what is really going on with the patient. It doesn't serve the patient to get them to take every dose of their medication religiously if they don't need it in the first place, or if it's causing them harm, or if it's interfering with something else they're doing. So no matter, they may have filled their prescriptions religiously, which you see from claims. They may tell their caregiver, their care coordinator, their physician, that they're taking every dose religiously, yet they're showing up in the emergency room once a month in congestive heart failure. And maybe it's because they're taking their diuretic every morning with a big glass of pickle juice. This was a true story that was told to us by a nurse care manager. So that just totally wipes out the effect of the diuretic. So you see the problem. You really have to get to the reasons for adherence or non-adherence, and that's what we do. We bring a finer level of resolution to that. If you can line up the claims information, line up what the doctor ordered, and then actually use the patient as the gold standard to what is going on, then you're going to get at truth and be able to solve some of the adherence problem.
So what kind of receptivity are you seeing out there to widen this loop, if you will, and incorporate observations of daily living as sort of critical inputs into how this whole process is being managed? What, are you getting resistance, or is there excitement about embracing this?
At the moment, there's interest in the observations of daily living, and a lot of other platforms are addressing that part of it, the whole idea of a patient-centered medical home. It's not just about the patient's clinical status, but, everything from socioeconomic or just what care systems they have in place. And there are a lot of care management platforms now that are starting to do that. So we are moving our focus more to the medication piece, which is so critical. But think about it, it doesn't help to remind a patient to take their insulin when they're supposed to if they don't even know where their next meal is coming from. So that's the larger context of especially the highest risk patients in this country, the dual eligible patients and some of our complex older adults, the frail and the elderly. So, again, we're kind of moving away from that broad context of observations of daily living, although we can work with that data and factor it into our risk rule framework, but we are very focused on the self-medication behavior and how that interacts with basic drug-drug interaction, and as well as some of the metrics that Medicare wishes to look at for quality. So we're focused there now.
So without naming names, unless you choose to, can you cite a few customer base and perhaps a use case or two that gets the value?
Yeah, absolutely. So starting with a large safety net payer, a managed care organization in Southern California, they have been able to use our solution to look just at their members' claims data from their own claims database and, again, see a finer resolution of risk and what might need an intervention in patients, and actually use our tool to do medication reviews that enable them to attest to a Medicare quality measure. And the reason they were able to use it is because we don't require a clinical pharmacist or a doctor to actually use the tool. You can have lower levels of licensure actually do the review of the data and even the structured interview if you're going to include the patient. So they've been able to use it just at the level of looking at their STARS reporting and attesting to certain Medicare quality measures around medication. We also have a number of commercial evaluations ongoing now. A good example of payer and provider collaborating are a health plan in upstate New York who is working with one of their large healthcare systems to do a medication reconciliation when the plan's members are discharged from the hospital. And again, they're using our tool as a way to streamline and standardize the reconciliation process. Right now, it takes a doctor doing a reconciliation a good deal of time to do it in more than a perfunctory way of checking off meds, but to actually do a medication review could take as much as an hour of a physician's time, which they don't have, and it becomes costly. So we can, they can use our tool to do much of the data aggregation, the interpretation, and the distillation of it, where a nurse practitioner, a care manager, or a physician can then look at the results, see them, and sign off on that and do the intervention. So that's a use case at transition of care, in particular the discharge use case. We also have a large healthcare system, again in New York, who is using the tool in their ambulatory clinics. So with providers who are attached to the healthcare system in a high-risk diabetic population. And again, they're using a clinical pharmacist to do this now, to do a comprehensive medication review for these patients, which, again, takes an hour of highly skilled, expensive time, and they're able to use our solution in the hands of pharmacy techs and students to stage the data, to interview the patients, and to escalate it up to the clinical pharmacist who can use their time to structure the intervention. So, again, a way to drive some costs out of the system, but also get to a better result. And in all these cases, they're seeing things that they would not have even seen in the first place. And I'll just give you one other use case, which focuses on our structured interview at New York Presbyterian Hospital. They have a very successful program using community health workers. These are non-licensed, culturally competent individuals who go into the homes of high-risk diabetic patients. And to date, they would just focus on their diabetes meds, but they were able to successfully take our structured interview into the home of the diabetic patients and do a more thorough inventory of the patient's medications. And in every case, they identified something that needed an intervention. When the data were brought back to the nurse case manager, in every case, something was needed. And in two cases, there were profound interventions. One was a hypertension patient with a history of stroke and also diabetic who was not taking her hypertension meds. That was a stroke waiting to happen, and that was an immediate intervention. And the second was a congestive heart failure patient where they simply did not have any of their Lasix prescription in the house and were not taking it. And that also required an immediate intervention. So they're seeing a new level of there's much greater transparency into what these patients are doing, and a way to be proactive about having an impact on their outcomes instead of waiting and doing things retroactively or looking just at claims data and then reaching out months later.
Perfect. So, Pat, before we wrap up, I just might make mention that in your history, you were part of the inaugural class at the New York Digital Health Accelerator, wherein your peer group was populated with names that have been in the press recently: Aiden, Avado, Curator, MedCPO, Remedy Systems, and Spectra MD. So what's next for Actual Meds?
Well, we are at a very important inflection point. We have our first customers that are coming on board now. We are about to launch our next generation, the second generation of our solution, and we're in the process of raising our Series A round of financing to help scale the business and grow it. So those are my very esteemed colleagues in the New York Accelerator class that you mentioned. Some of them were a little more advanced than us in some ways, but that was an a really amazing program because it was unique in that it brought together healthcare systems, both payers and providers, who vetted the companies who were selected, plus investors who focus and understand health IT, that being a challenge, and then the New York eHealth Collaborative, who is the sponsor of the SHINE, the State Health Information Network of New York, and there we are one of their, we are their lead company who will be the first to exchange medication information at a health information exchange level, and that being right behind things like authorization and eligibility for 12 million New Yorkers who are part of the SHINE and making their medication available. And that brings us back to where we opened, which is we want to be the CARFAX of medication reconciliation. So when a person from Long Island happens to show up in the emergency room at Mount Sinai and they're on the SHINE, those ER docs can pull down their most recent medication history and be able to understand how to treat them.
Well, there you have it, and that's going to be the last word from our guest, Pat Miser, co-founder, CEO of Actual Meds. Follow them on the web at actualmeds.com and also on Twitter at Actual Meds. And I would just conclude by saying in this sharing economy, it truly takes a village, and collaboration is the name of the game here. So again, Pat, thanks for joining us today on This Week in Health Innovation. And we'll do this next week, same time, same place, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Pat. Greg Masters, saying bye now for This Week in Health Innovation.
Thank you so much, Greg.